about, because she just used a name. She didn't use a surname.
Yes, I'm calling her as to whether she's in the platform. Advocate Tiny, are you in the platform?
Now she's gone off. I had admitted her.
Honorable Chair?
Yes, she is on the platform, sir. She is on the platform now.
Okay.
Is it Nkosi Buthelezi?
Yeah, no, yes, sir. I just wanted to find out whether she's the only person can do the presentation. Her colleagues, can they help her?
Chairperson, can you hear me?
Who are you?
Tiny Siboko, Chairperson.
We've been waiting for you for 15 minutes, Tiny. What's going on?
Chairperson, I've heard your attempts to reach me. I was listening through Nikiwe and Una's cell phones. I've had technical glitches this morning, and I've been trying. And I do apologize, but I have been trying to connect. In fact, I've just realized that I had even had my speaker on mute. So as I was trying to get you were not hearing me because I had omitted to unmute my speaker.
Okay, let's start.
Yes, I beg your pardon, say, and you, honorable members.
Okay, thanks. Honorable members, the meeting is officially open. Let me welcome all honorable members present here in the platform. Welcome guests from Gadi Godrich attorneys who are going to make a presentation this morning. Welcome officials from Treasury, FSCA, I'm not sure if Prudential Authority is here, and other entities that have been invited. And welcome the support team from Parliament, supporting SCOF and other divisions of Parliament, the media. It's also welcome in the public. Roll call and apologies. Do we have apologies?
We didn't receive any apologies, sir.
There are no apologies.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Chairperson.
Recording in progress.
This meeting is being recorded.
May I please give apology for Ashur Sarupan? He's got a family matter that he needs to deal with this morning.
Okay. You will have to note the apology of Honorable Sarupan. You have to record it. Let's move to item 3, which is a presentation by the Gadi Godrich attorneys on the arbitrary and unilateral closure of bank accounts by the banks. On the 28th of April this year, we received a letter from Mr. Gadi Godrich through his firm of attorneys regarding the unilateral and arbitrary closure of bank accounts by banks in South Africa. I hope members have seen that. So we felt that it would be important that we invite them here to come and appear before the committee and present their matter. And then we see how we take the matter forward. So let me welcome Advocate Tiny, who is leading the team to make a presentation. Over to you, Advocate. If I'm not sure, because we have got problem of connectivity, the media, and in particular the parliamentary media, prefers that we show our faces through the video link But it looks like we have got the challenge of network. Sometimes when you have the voice and the video on at the same time, the problem gets aggravated. But let me hand over to you, Advocate.
Chairperson, that is indeed my problem today, but I've called our IT person to come and assist you, to assist me with my coverage and connectivity today. And I'm hoping to show my face to you and your colleagues and your other guests in a very short time. And if I may please proceed through you, Mr. Chairperson.
Yeah, you can proceed.
So, Chairperson, very briefly, our presentation will not detain you and your members for a very long time. So, briefly speaking, you should have seen from our letter sent to you through Gorish Gadi attorneys that there is a matter pending in the Cape Town, Western Cape Equality Court between the Sekunjalo group of companies and a few major banks in South Africa. We, on behalf of about five applicants, sought leave to intervene in that pending Equality Court application for our own individual clients who, in their personal capacity and also in their capacity as directors of companies operating in South Africa. That application was granted by the court without opposition from those that are respondents and those that are applicants in the matter, being the Sekunjalo group of companies. The reason why the clients of Goldrich Gadi sought to be permitted to join those proceedings is because on grounds similar to those mounted by the Sekunjalo group of companies, we needed to complain to the court that the clients of our individual, the bank accounts and the other banking products or facilities of our clients were unilaterally stopped by the banks in most cases or in all cases without notification. Our complaint and our ground for intervening in those proceedings were, amongst others, that when those applications were sought, the banks had not notified or complained to our clients that they may have in any way either offended the policies, the rules, and the regulations of the banks themselves. The banks have not complained or brought to the attention of our clients that they have been flagged either as people of a prominent and influential people, or whether there has been complaints in the formal structures, law enforcement, about money laundering and related offenses. Our clients have just been provided with letters by the banks, the major banks, that they are risk to the banks and therefore their facilities are going to be closed. Subsequent to our clients being granted that right to Chairperson, am I still connected? Can you still hear me?
Yes.
Can you see me, Chairperson?
We can hear you, but we can't see. You can present. Okay, continue with the presentation.
Yes, I'll do so. Thank you, sir. Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. So, subsequent to our clients being granted leave to intervene in the Sekunjalo main application in the Western Cape High Court,
Chair, I think she's muted.
Is she not cut off? Yeah, it doesn't look like she's still in the platform. Dr. George.
Thank you, Chairperson. I do think she's muted because I can see her lips moving, but I can't hear anything. But I also wanted to ask the question is that, you know, we did receive the letter, et cetera. This appears to be a matter before the courts. So I'm just wondering why we are actually going into this matter in the committee, given that it's before the courts. I mean, that is not our function. So I'm just a little confused about that. Perhaps if you could clarify, thank you.
Let's allow her to present. Then when she will be done, we'll deliberate on and the way forward and how we deal with the matter. Advocate Tiny, are you still there? Nikiwe and Onalina, you don't have the presentation such that you can continue from where she paused then, because we don't have much time.
Thank you, Chair. I think I will continue until Tiny is able to join the platform once again. Just to answer to Mr. George.
Wait, Nikki, make a presentation. We'll deal with that matter after. Proceed with Tiny's agenda presentation, where she paused because of problem of network. If you have the presentation before you.
I'm opening the presentation at the moment, Chair. Thank you, Chair. I believe my leader ended off by stating that our clients have been associated with risk in certain banking institutions where nothing has been stated about what risk is being deterred or what other policy they have deterred. The common denominator amongst our clients is that they are Black persons. And that is the basis that we have also joined into the application in the Equality Court on the basis of discrimination. More than that is having the courts recognize that without a banking facility, because not only is it one bank that closes down these accounts, it follows that all other major banks do just about the same thing. And of course, that is then deemed as unbanking. And the result of that on any person is that they are not able to continue with their lives or any part of their lives. They're not able to hold a bond. In fact, in some of these instances, our clients have had their children's bank accounts closed merely on the basis that they're associated with those persons. Okay, I've just been informed by my leader that she is back online, if she can continue.
Chairperson, are you there? Can you hear me now?
I can hear you and can see you.
Thank you. So just to piggyback from where my learned colleague, Ms. Nyati, left off. So the implications of that unbanking is effectively that, as you can anticipate, the bonds cannot go off, the salaries cannot go off, living becomes difficult because for you to even apply for a rental, as is the case with one of our applicants, you are unable to prove that your credit scoring, your credit worthiness. So as I have said, in the Equality Court, we have been admitted, but the main case, that of Sekunjalo with us now as co-applicants, is pending. And you, as you and your honorable colleagues would know, that we call it sub judice. So without going on the too deeply in the merits of the particular cases of our applicants, we have now concluded an application, as I said earlier, to the FIC to see whether or not there was reasonable suspicion from the banks acting as how they did, whether a knowledge that a financial product of our clients were used for illegal purposes, right? Because in those circumstances, the banks will still be under a duty in terms of the Financial Intelligence Act to report those irregularities. So if those irregularities were committed by our clients, which is what we deny, we know for sure that there will not be such reportage at the FIC. So, you know, the bank, if they regard our clients as high risks, we don't know. What we know for sure is that the consequences of the closures brings about undesirable consequences for our clients. So in a nutshell, in very high level, this is that's effectively where we are in terms of our application. The first applicant in our intervention matter, and as well as the application which is 95% ready to the FIC for the disclosure of documents. The first applicant is a woman who is a state employee in the Eastern Cape whose bank account was terminated without knowledge. The second one is an individual sole proprietor of a business in the KZN region, and his own personal bank accounts and those of his company were shut down by the banks without any knowledge. The bank account of one of the political parties, Democracy in Action, also suffered the same fate. No notification. In the case of the Democracy in Action bank account, the allegation there is because the banks sought to accuse that political party of allegiance to a certain individual in the country. So effectively, that's where we are, and that's the basis of our application to the Equality Court. As Nikiwe correctly said, the grounds for our intervention and our grounds for our participation in that application is that the termination of our banking products was solely based on race and nothing else. They were arbitrary as they were unlawful. All three our individual applicants are Black individuals and their companies, and there's no reason at all. There has not been any complaint against them being accused of money laundering, of illicit financial activities in the country or outside of this country. So our case in a nutshell is that they have done nothing wrong in terms of money laundering and related offenses. And I end there, Mr. Chairman, Honorable Chairman.
Okay. Thanks, Advocate Tainis Buku, for the presentation. Let me invite National Treasurer and FSCA to respond, as it is in the agenda. National Treasurer, over to you.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you for inviting us to present today. May I just start off by just expressing our apologies on behalf of the Deputy Minister, who is otherwise engaged, as well as the Acting Director General, who have a previous engagement and could not attend today. Chair, I'm going to just project a presentation, but it may be just useful by starting out and just explaining clearly, of course, Chair, that as has been already stated on during the session, that the matter that is being discussed and the matter that's been presented is a matter currently before the court, and therefore we cannot comment on any specifics relating to that matter. So, Chair, we're massively constrained. We will obviously follow the rules and allow the that matter to be processed in the correct area, which is of course the courts. Instead, Chair, what we will be presenting is just a description of the framework that we have in ensuring that customers of financial products are treated fairly, and the journey that we have had in particular in making sure that the interests of customers are elevated. It's been a central policy objective of the National Treasury's for over a decade now, coming up to two decades, and we have made significant progress in this area, we believe, Chair, in the interest of customers. So let me start by just putting up the presentation, if we can. Bear with me, Chair. If that's okay. Apologies.
Can you share with Duty on the table?
Ngoni, can you project the slides if that's possible? This is a colleague of mine.
Okay, let me try for Gila. Thank you.
Joe, I can speak to the slides in the interim if that's okay. I see we have just about excellent. Thanks, Ngoni. If we can just put it on presentation mode, I think it'd be easier for everyone to see. Great. Thank you, Jen. Just next slide, please, Ngoni. So, Chair, like I say, we'll be really focusing on the principles and a description of the policy environment. And a really good place to start is, as usual, is the beginning. So, Chair, just to present a brief history of how banks operate, and this is a 100 plus year history. So, as many of the colleagues would know, and certainly the legal presenters before us, South Africa's legal system is largely based on a combination of Roman, Dutch, and English common law. With banks, as with almost all commercial transactions in the economy, being largely regulated and operating through contractual arrangements governed in the main by English common law, having its basis historically in English common law. And these chair include, you know, taking on customers in terms of those contractual arrangements. And like I said, this applies to almost all commercial transactions, whether it's your cell phone transaction, buying a any sort of continuing service, whether that it's procuring legal services or entering into contracts for television, DSTV, cell phones, et cetera, et cetera. So, Chair, when we started having experiencing banking failures, or we had experienced a raft of significant banking failures, which led to the change in institutional arrangements with the SARB supervising banks with the express mandate to protect ordinary depositors. And this was really done in the main through ensuring that the financial institution, which is where regulatory requirements can be placed. I mean, clearly, regulatory requirements cannot really be placed on customers of financial transactions, but rather the financial institutions themselves. And this was the mechanism for ensuring that the funds of ordinary depositors can be protected. So, Chip, banking is largely based on trust, with a long tradition of both sort of banking secrecy and bank confidentiality, although these two things are, of course, different. In the past, we've come from an era of excessive secrecy. This was sort of characterized, famously by sort of Swiss banking secrecy laws. And there was a general recognition, Chair, that this excessive secrecy led to grand theft, corruption, and other types of crimes, including tax evasions. So governments across the world agreed that there was a real requirement and interest in weakening bank secrecy in favor of transparency and introducing a framework and rules around, in particular, money laundering, which was based on customer due diligence, which is CDD, and know your customer requirements. Now this culminated, Chair, largely in 1989, where FATF was established by countries who clearly, as I mentioned, recognized the need to have a framework and impose obligations on banks to stop banks hiding behind secrecy and other legal conventions that could potentially facilitate the concealment of criminal of proceeds of crime through both organized crime, corruption, and other forms of illicit activities. Next slide, please. So just to maybe zero in on what's happened domestically and then the journey that we have taken since democracy and just before that in the legislative framework. In 1990, we established the Banks Act, and there there was a principal objective for the South African Reserve Bank to protect depositor funds by ensuring banks are able to meet their promises to customers on their deposits. As part of that framework, an Office of Bank Registrar was established, and their principal mandate was the prudential supervision or the prudential regulation of banks. Shortly after that, Chair, the regulatory framework was expanded following the Funderhorst Committee findings, which established the Financial Services Board in 1991. and their chair prudential supervision was extended to a host of non-bank financial institutions like insurance companies, asset managers, and those sorts of firms. In 2003, Chair, South Africa introduced its anti-money laundering legislation for the first time, and this required banks, despite their strong resistance, to ensure that they know their customers and undertake sufficient and implement international best practice in understanding who their customers are and what their customers are doing. Chair, at the same time, we also introduced work to ensure that the interests of ordinary financial customers, as well as those who hadn't up to then had access to financial services, were protected. And this was done through the introduction of transformation and inclusion objectives for the banking sector, including the financial sector codes. At this time, Chair, we also established a framework for the Mzansi accounts aimed at dramatically expanding access of financial services, including banking services, to ordinary citizens. Next slide, please. So, Chair, we then get to the point where we introduce the Twin Peaks system of regulation. We had, as you would have seen in the previous slides, largely had a framework that had focused primarily on the prudential aspects of regulation. But following in the 2007 financial scandal, as well as externally the 2008 global financial crisis, which at the Genesis, Chair, showed the importance of underpinning and really basing the regulatory framework on ensuring that customers are treated fairly and that customers are not abused. This culminated in the base policy paper in 2011, A Safer Financial Sector to Serve South Africa Better. The Twin Peaks system was established in 2008, as I mentioned, Chair, with obligations for financial institutions to treat customers fairly and establishing a dedicated financial sector regulator to ensure that this policy objective was met. And that of course, Chair, is the Financial Sector Conduct Authority, who will be presenting after me. In section 106 of the Financial Sector Regulation Act, or Twin Peaks, Chair, this empowers FSCA to introduce standards on how banks terminate accounts, which I guess is the subject of today. And the Financial Sector Conduct Authority will go into some detail about how that framework operates. Chair, we also establish a more rigorous and stronger appeal ombud mechanism with a chief ombud. And this really provides an additional mechanisms for ordinary customers of financial products who feel that they have not been treated fairly by their banks or any financial service provider. To be able to have a mechanism to air those grievances and be represented there. And Chair, the ombud system is something that I maybe just to spend a little bit more time on it is really significant because it really is calibrated and designed for financial customers who don't have a lot of resources, who cannot engage the services of lawyers, multiple lawyers, advocates. To be able to be heard and have their complaints understood and adjudicated in a fair and transparent way. Chair, I'm going to spend some time taking us through some of the policy framework for financial inclusion, as well as some really significant improvements and policy successes in expanding access to banking, to bank services and bank accounts in particular, through the years. And of course, this is particularly in relation to those parts of society that previously did not have access to financial services. I'm going to ask my colleague Sapati to take us through this pillar, which will be the next couple of slides. Sapati?
Thank you, Vukile. Good morning, Chair and honorable members. My name is Sipati Nakhondela from National Treasury, and I'm just going to be briefly taking you through the financial inclusion efforts that have really supported improvement in access to formal regulated financial services in the past years. So as we can see from the slide there, the headline data on financial inclusion in South Africa reflects quite positively on the country's achievements in this area over the last decade. At least 91% of South African adults...
Chairperson.
Shubham, honorable.
Yeah, my apologies. I'm going to later on leave because I'm joining a chief whips forum at 10 o'clock. But I don't think National Treasury is dealing with what is expected. I thought that the mandate and topic of the engagement today is the arbitrary closure of bank accounts by banks, not about broad questions of how the banking sector has been expanded to include everyone else. I thought the focus today is that there's a phenomenon that is obtaining where banks just close people's accounts because they do not like them. And that was the issue, which is under litigation, yes, but I think as a committee, we should pay attention to, but in a much more comprehensive and cogent, clear way, which also must get the FSCA to come and present what are the regulatory conditionalities and permissibility that can make banks close people's accounts arbitrarily. And then get the banks as well to come and explain on what basis do they just close people's banks accounts and institutions which they've got political differences with. That perhaps should be a schedule for discussion and as a separate issue, not to convolute this issue in the manner that is being done now, because we're going to miss the point completely and not address the issue that is topical today. Let us not be all over, because I listened to the first presentation and what is being added now is a complete diversion of what necessarily has to be discussed by the Standing Committee on Finance as to why are banks closing people's and institutions' account arbitrarily without following due process, without even questioning them. And majority of times, it's people whom they've got political differences with. If a certain establishment says that this person has said this or that and everything else, they just close your bank account to frustrate you. That is what has to be investigated as a separate issue. Whether there is a litigation somewhere or not, we should, as a committee, pay attention to that. But I don't think National Treasury is doing justice to this topic. And they are like almost purposefully trying to divert us from what we have to deal with. Thanks, Chair.
Okay, Honorable Shubham, I get your point. Let's allow them first to deal with the policy matter so that we have got a background as to where government stands in regard to regulation of financial institutions. I think when we come to FSCA, that's where, which is an entity specifically established to deal with the matter being raised by our guest today, they will come in regard to the issues you are raising. So let's allow National Treasury to finish and deal with policy matters so that we have got a grounding to say this is where we are in terms of police. And then the entity FSCA will come in. If possible, can you delegate somebody to attend that meeting so that you remain here? Move faster, National Treasurer, so that we can take FSCA.
Okay, thank you, Chair. Goni, I think we can move on to the next slide. And just to briefly go through this slide, I think we are all aware that the introduction of the Mzansi account back in 2004 was as a result of the banking sector's commitment to the financial sector charter. And also this account was intended to significantly improve access to banking, particularly transactional banking for low income earners. Next slide, please, Ngoni. In terms of access to financial services here, I think we should also just note that there are still some underlying problems with regard to the use of financial services. In as much as I showed in the first slide that the use of digital payment channels has increased for most of the population, I think cash still remains a primary means of value of exchange. And this is particularly prevalent among our low income earners because mainly access in their communities of in terms of digital payments remains very, very low, and cash is the most used payment method in the informal economy. And what we have picked up is this phenomenon of mailbox users where as soon as the money is deposited into the account, all of it is then soon after that withdrawn. But just in terms of what we are working on with regard to the draft financial inclusion policy under Pillar 1, which talks to deepening financial inclusion for financial inclusion, for individuals, we are also looking at promoting the beneficial use of transaction accounts, the increase of financial inclusion impact of social grant distribution, as well as improving inefficiencies in the onboarding of financial services clients. Thank you. Back to you, Vukile.
Thank you. So Chair, that's I think a really good summary of the policy journey we've been on. And that really points to Treasury's and I think broader government's commitment to expanding access to financial services and certainly not restricting that. And having this as a central pillar of our policy and our work since the early 2000s and certainly a little bit before that. So Chair, I will then sort of maybe turn to a case study on the specific elements of or the specific issue around conduct around closure of bank accounts. And here, Chair, we had an important case study in 2016-17, which related to the Gupta family and Gupta group of companies. Their Chair, in a matter that was adjudicated in the courts, and this was Standard Bank versus Bread Income. It was established, Chair, that that either party, either contractual party who have a customer-client relationship, could unilaterally terminate their relationship, and the government did not have the power to intervene in customer-client relationships. And in fact, Chair, it was illegal to do so. And there was much pressure in 2016 through various channels applied by the Oak Bay group of companies, including the CEO, for government to intervene. Rather than exercising their legal options, which is to take their banks with whom they have the contractual relationship to court. When this was happening, Chair, we had secured, or we had commissioned a legal opinion, or the Minister of Finance, rather, the National Treasury and the Minister of Finance secured or commissioned a legal opinion that indicated and spelt out the limits for cabinet and ministers in intervening in bank client contractual matters. Chair, we are aware as well that the matter has been covered and discussed in the Zondo Commission, and there have been specific recommendations made in this area, which I'll touch on a little later in the presentation. And Chair, with all of the above, of course, these legal opinions are in the public domain and can be and can be seen by anyone. So in addition, Chair, the Minister of Finance took the matter to court for a declaratory order on establishing the powers of the minister to intervene or not to intervene. And those aspects are also included in the court documents. So Chair, what this kind of boils down to is that, or at least this is what was I think articulated in these various legal legal discussions and court proceedings, is that banks face more than just reputational risk when taking on specific customers that they regard as high risk, as they may face sanctions from overseas regulators, and therefore they tend to be risk averse. And Chair, this really relates to if banks consider if South African banks are considered not to take appropriate actions in dealing with what are considered to be the illegal activities of customers, banks in other jurisdictions are required to cut off relationships with those banks. And very often, Chair, what happens is that a jurisdiction will take a view on another jurisdiction. So this can happen both on a bank-to-bank level, but in some instances we've seen there's been a jurisdiction-to-jurisdiction view taken on this. And this is something that we have resisted and tried to ensure that banks and regulators really look at things on a case-by-case basis. We've done that domestically, but this has also been a very important focus of a policy focus internationally, where we've engaged with the international standard-setting bodies and with countries on a bilateral basis to try and resist this phenomenon that is called broad de-risking. And this because, Chair, the implications are massive for the economy, jobs, and growth. If a bank or a jurisdiction is deemed not to take adequate actions in relation to these activities, clearly then, Chair, nobody at that bank, or in the worst case scenario in that jurisdiction, can access or have established relationships with external financial institutions, which are critical for growth, employment, and the economy more broadly. Sipati, maybe you can take us just through this slide again, which is the code of banking practice the background, the context, and the substantive elements of this policy work.
So, Vukile, not to speak on behalf of the banks or anything like that, I think the intention of the slide was just to note that in terms of the, just hang on a second, apologies. So in terms of the code of banking practice, which is a voluntary measure that has been put in place by the banks to ensure that customers are treated fairly, there are basic steps that need to be taken in terms of before an account can be closed. So in the first one there where they mentioned that they will assist a consumer to close an account should they no longer require it, but also that reasonable notice will be given prior to an account being closed. And I think even with the banking ombud, they have asserted that it is important that before an account can be closed, it is important that the consumer be notified in writing. But also just in terms of the account closing processes, it's important that the consumer understand that the bank also has a right to protect its interest with regards to where they need to be in compliance with the law or by international best practice as is noted there. And in the event where consumers have not used the account for a significant period of time, or if they have reason to believe that the account is being used for nefarious purposes. Thanks.
Thank you. So Chair, just as we begin to round off, we have had the Zondo Commission of Inquiry into state capture. And there, Chair, recommendations were made with respect to procedural aspects of closure of bank accounts in the interest of fairness. And just maybe to quote from there, it said that the relevant existing legislation governing banks to be amended to introduce this requirement of fairness, or if warranted, a piece of legislation would be enacted which will make this a requirement. They go on to say, Chair, that the bank would need to afford a client a proper opportunity to be heard and should not just go through the motions or pay lip service to the principle of audi alteram partem, which is here the other side. Of course, Chair, as you will be aware, we in the executive, under the coordination of the presidency, will be responding to Zondo Commission related recommendations in a coherent and comprehensive way later this year. Next slide. Sorry, okay, just the final slide. I hope I can, just to conclude. So Chair, I think it's very important that we try and really sort of narrow in on what the problem is and the problem we're trying to solve. Of course, Chair, a lot of what we do from a policy perspective is really aimed at ensuring that the most vulnerable and ordinary citizens are not prejudiced, that they are able to access financial services, and just to provide some data on this issue, Chair, the ombud data, which is of course where ordinary citizens can complain about various aspects of treatments with financial institutions, including banks, Chair, that suggests that the issue characterizes as arbitrary bank closures is not a significant problem. In fact, the last time, and I stand under correction that this was cited as a specific complaint was 2018, some 4 years ago. And of course, Chair, in that time as well, as you would have seen earlier, there's simultaneously been a very strong increase in the usage of bank accounts. But there are other key questions that we should, of course, consider. And of course, we should always be open and consider ways in which the system could be improved and make sure that we're doing as much as we can to ensure the protection of customers and the fair treatment of customers. Lastly, Chair, as I've just flagged in the previous slide, where improvements can be made on the fairness and procedural aspects for individuals. Of course, Chair, as I noted earlier, you know, firms, large firms, corporations, and wealthy individuals, they have access to lawyers and can litigate this through the courts. But certainly at the level of ordinary consumers of financial products and banking products, a huge amount has been done, and the data would suggest that there certainly isn't a significant problem there. Although, like I say, Chair, we should always be looking to strengthen and improve the system. Chair, let me stop there and call through you, Chair, on the Financial Sector Conduct Regulator to take us through some of the technical aspects of how they provide supervision and regulatory aspects in relation to banking services.
FSCA, are you there?
Yes, good morning, Chair, and good morning, honorable members. Chair, can I just check if you can hear me properly, as I have a very weak connection?
We can hear and we can see you.
Okay, thank you. I am going to switch off the camera when I put up the presentation just to make sure there aren't problems. But for now, just to say thank you to you, the Chair, and to the committee for inviting us to present. I do want to note an apology on behalf of Onati, Commissioner Onati Kumlana from the FSCA, who could not join us today. My name is Fizana Badat. I'm one of the deputy commissioners at the Financial Sector Conduct Authority. And I think I just want to repeat what our colleagues also at National Treasury have said. We are very much aware of the pending litigation, and we are actually cited as one of the parties to the pending litigation. So we will not be able to deal with the specific case at hand or address any of the specific points that were raised by Advocate Sobolko up front. However, what we will do is, to the point that was raised by Member Shivambu, is we will briefly take the committee through what the legal or the regulatory position is in terms of what it is that we look at when we're dealing with banks in terms of the processes that they go through when closing bank accounts and some of the issues that we may have picked up so far. So with that, So I see on here that the host is not allowing me to share my screen. I'm not sure, Chair, if there's something from your side that needs to be done to enable me to actually share the presentation or to make me a host.
I have made her host, sir.
Okay.
Ah, thank you. Okay, so just let me know if you can see the presentation.
Yeah, you can see the
presentation. Okay. Thank you very much. So I will try to keep this very brief. As I mentioned, what I will talk about very quickly is what the current regulatory position is in terms of the obligations on banks when closing accounts, and some of the things that we found when we are dealing with the banks generally, not talking about any specific cases, And I think also to some of the points that colleague Bukile raised, some areas that we've identified that could potentially be improved in regulation in the future. And finally, I think there's been some discussion also by Bukile around balancing the issues around customer fairness with responsibilities that banks have around risk management and risk assessment to prevent AML, anti-money laundering risks, et cetera. So I will end the presentation by handing over to my colleague Samira from the Prudential Authority, who will also talk very briefly around some of the expectations that the PA has for banks in order to manage some of these risks, which sometimes may require them to close bank accounts. So just to start off, I think the first thing that's important to share with the committee is there's two specific issues that actually guide the FSCA when we're looking at this issue of the closure of bank accounts. The first one is understanding what is our mandate as the FSCA, as the conduct regulator, and this comes from the Financial Sector Regulation Act, which empowers us to ensure that financial institutions as well as banks treat customers fairly, but also to promote financial inclusion. But what's important to note here is that the FSCA, the mandate is not to adjudicate or get involved with individual disputes or contractual disputes between customers and banks. However, we look generally at the consistency and the fairness that banks apply when they're executing their rights and responsibilities under these contracts. We've also been empowered in terms of Section 106 to issue conduct standards that actually sets out principles that banks need to adhere to ensure that their customers are treated fairly. And that's what a lot of this presentation is going to focus on. What does our conduct standard actually say about the closing of bank accounts? The other thing that we always need to bear in mind when looking at this issue of bank account closures is the fact that the relationship between a bank and a client is governed by the law of contract. And I think this has been mentioned previously and also been upheld by the court in a few decisions, that the bank has a legal right to refuse to take on a client or terminate its services to a client for various reasons. As long as those reasons don't violate public policy or constitutional values. I think what we've seen through the Biedenkamp and OPE decisions is that a third party, so the government institution or a regulator, can't actually compel a bank to take on a client or to reinstate a previously terminated client relationship. Now, moving on to the FSCA itself, and what it is that we look at in terms of bank account closures. As I mentioned, Section 106 of the Financial Sector Regulation Act empowered us to develop conduct standards to ensure that financial institutions treat customers fairly. And as part of this, it also empowered us to develop standards, setting guidance and principles for the processes that institutions, including banks, must put in place when deciding to withdraw or terminate accounts. We published a conduct standard specifically dealing with banks in July 2020. The standard only became effective in July 2021. So basically, it's only been about a year that these requirements have been applicable to banks. So we are still very much in the process of assessing the extent to which banks have actually internalized some of these requirements within their institution. So it is early days. I think as Vukile mentioned, this issue of customer fairness and conduct regulation was not something that was applied to banks prior to 2018. So the banks are very much in early days around considering fairness requirements, et cetera. What is important in terms of the conduct standard is that it does not alter the contractual relationship between banks and their clients. In other words, it doesn't change the relationship between a bank and the client from one of private contract to one, for example, as a relationship between a public entity and a client. So the law of contract still applies. However, what the conduct standard does, it introduces basic requirements of fairness. In other words, what should a bank consider in the processes that it puts in place to ensure that any decisions that it makes relating to the client are actually fair? Now, on this slide, what I've got very briefly is specifically what the conduct standard says when it comes to the closing of bank accounts. Now, generally, the conduct standard imposes a requirement of fairness on banks, but in terms of closure of bank accounts, it actually says that banks must implement processes and procedures relating to the circumstances in which they would withdraw or terminate a financial product or financial service, including a bank account. It says that before a bank actually closes a bank account or withdraws a financial product or service, it must provide reasonable notice to the client. So in other words, it must give the client time to be aware that the account will be closed, and of course, if they need to make alternative arrangements. The standard also is very clear that the bank must provide reasons to the client for the proposed withdrawal or termination. There are a few exceptions. So in a case where the bank has a duty to terminate the relationship because of another existing law, they don't need to provide reasons. The other situation in which a bank does not have to provide reasons is if the bank has reasonable suspicion that the product or service or the bank account is being used for any illegal purpose. Now, I know there were questions around whether a bank is allowed to unilaterally terminate a contract. If you read the requirements of the standard, actually, it implies that banks may not unilaterally terminate a contract because it specifically says that the customer must be aware upfront through the contract what the circumstances are in which that a bank could terminate the contract. In other words, when a customer enters into a banking relationship or enters into an agreement for opening a bank account, they must be aware at that point that there are only certain circumstances or certain reasons that a bank may use in order to close that bank account. It doesn't specify what those reasons can be, but we do know that one of the reasons that has been used together with the issue around potential criminal activity is the issue of reputational damage. And we do know that the Bredenkamp court case specifically dealt with the issue of reputation as an acceptable reason to close a bank account. And it also says that when it comes to issues of contract, there has to be an expectation of fairness on both sides, both for the bank as well as the client. Now, the challenge that we're sitting with, and I think this was the issue that came through the Zondo Commission report, and which is what Vukile also ended his presentation on, the conduct standard does not explicitly require a bank to provide clients with the opportunity to be heard before the bank account is closed. So they must be given reasonable notice, but it doesn't specifically oblige the banks to say to them, but you do have a right to be heard and you can provide reasons to us as to why the termination of this bank account is unfair or why you think we're wrong in terms of closing the bank account. Now, in applying this, and again, I must repeat, these requirements have only been in place for about a year. So we're only in very early stages in terms of our engagements with banks around how they are actually implementing these requirements. We do this through a variety of ways. We do this through testing of the processes that the banks have in place. We do this through ongoing engagements with the banks. We also do this through analyzing of complaints that do reach us around issues of bank account closures. But on this point, I have to emphasize that the FSCA has not to date received many complaints dealing specifically with bank account closures. There have been one or two cases, but generally these complaints are actually dealt with by the Ombud for Banking Services, because as I mentioned up front, individual disputes between clients and banks are actually referred to the banking ombud. So I do think if the committee wants to take this discussion forward, it would be helpful to actually ask the banking ombud to perhaps present on the extent to which this may be an issue and the number of and scale of complaints that they may receive in respect to the closure of bank accounts. We are going to be doing some work going forward to actually also have access to this data so that we have a better sense of whether this is a bigger problem than we are currently aware of. Some of the things that we have noticed in our engagements with banks is while they do abide by the requirements to provide notice, et cetera, it's sometimes inconsistency, the grounds or the reasons that they give for closing bank accounts. But to our knowledge, we haven't seen any substantive evidence that there's targeted discrimination in terms of closing of bank accounts. But we do think that some of the reasons that have been given sometimes may be a bit vague. I mean, some of the common reasons that are being used is adverse media attention or potential reputational damage. But this is something that we are engaging with the banks in a lot more detail, because we want to understand the level of detail and the governance processes that the banks follow before coming to this conclusion. Some of the banks have already been able to evidence the detailed risk assessments and governance processes that they do go through before making these decisions. But again, this is not yet consistently applied across the sector, because the different banks are at different stages of actually applying the conduct standard, because as I mentioned, it's still early days for them. We have already identified that there's potential areas for improvement. So we do know that because the requirements in the conduct standard are quite general, it talks about reasonable notice, it talks about reasonable suspicion, and this sometimes doesn't give enough guidance to banks on what do we mean by reasonable notice. What would be acceptable when assessing a reasonable suspicion of illegal activity? So we have acknowledged that we probably need to provide a lot more guidance to the industry in helping them make these decisions. To this point, we are in ongoing engagements with the industry to try and identify potential gaps in the standard. We're also aware, as Advocate Saboko raised up front, that there is pending litigation to actually establish whether decisions taken by bank accounts amount to administrative action, which would require a high level of scrutiny. So we are also very interested in the outcome of that decision. We also want to share that National Treasury is currently developing a more overarching piece of legislation called the Conduct of Financial Institution Bill, which aims to include strengthened fairness requirements, which we think might address some of the issues raised. But of course, there would be discussions both within this committee as well as with the Treasury as to whether those requirements go far enough, considering some of the challenges and the issues that have been raised today. The other challenge that we're sitting with is, at this point, we don't have sufficient data to assess how legitimate some of the allegations are around arbitrary closure of bank accounts. So we do have certain initiatives in place to try and gather this data. One of them is a targeted thematic review that we'll be embarking on to actually do a deep dive into the risk assessment processes and the bank account closure processes across the banks. We also will be rolling out a very detailed statutory reporting process for banks, very similar to the financial reporting that they currently do. And some of the data that we'll be asking for will be around the number of bank account closures, some of the reasons for the bank accounts, the number of dormant bank accounts that they have, as well as metrics around some of the complaints that they receive and how wide scale, if any, the issue is around potential discrimination or arbitrary closure of bank accounts. As I mentioned, the future position, and I think the Treasury will be in a better position to confirm how far advanced they are in finalizing the Kofi bill before it can actually come to this committee. There are certain positive requirements that will be imposed on banks going forward. Firstly, banks will be required proactively to identify and promote a culture that supports ethical behavior. There's also a specific requirement included in the Kofi bill in future that financial institutions, including banks, must take all reasonable steps to avoid harm to customers, but also to make sure that they do this in a manner that is unbiased and does not unfairly discriminate against customers. And from this perspective, there's a specific reference to the Promotion of Equality and Prevention of Unfair Discrimination Act. And finally, that banks may not impose unreasonable barriers for customers to actually hold them accountable for expectations that have been created in terms of the contractual relationship. So as I mentioned, I think the discussion going forward would be whether these proposed future interventions and improvements actually go far enough and will address the particular issues and challenges that have been raised today and also that are being raised through the courts. The final thing, and this is where I will hand over to colleague Samira from the Prudential Authority, I think it's also important that we balance this issue of customer fairness with the requirement on banks to implement specific risk assessment and mitigation processes to deal with suspicious transactions and also to avoid exposure from themselves, from international sanctions, etc. So Samira, I'll hand over to you to maybe close off from our side. Thank you so much. And thank you to the committee for the time and the hearing.
Thank you, Fazana. Good morning, Chair and honorable members. As Fazana mentioned, my name is Samira Dawood Bhagwan. I work within the Prudential Authority. I'm one of the divisional heads within the Prudential Authority. Very briefly, in terms of the expectations, so banks are expected to identify and assess the money laundering terrorist financing risk associated with their clients, as prescribed in terms of the Financial Intelligence Center Act. And furthermore, the banks should seek to mitigate and manage the risk that is associated by the clients and then not arbitrarily close bank accounts. Just as an example, in terms of the Prudential Authority stance, a recently issued Banks Act Guidance Note 10 of 2022 provides an example of the stance that risk assessment doesn't necessarily imply that institutions should seek to avoid the risk entirely. It's more about managing the risk. And it's also acknowledged that de-risking may pose a threat to the financial integrity in general and to the application of the risk-based approach, specifically because it could potentially create opacity in the affected person or entity's financial conduct, and it eliminates the possibility to treat the money laundering, terrorist financing, and proliferation financing threats. It would thus be prudent for the banks to conduct an adequate risk assessment, which will then assist them in determining the appropriate level of due diligence and risk management measures that are necessary, as opposed to total avoidance, which is in line with the application of a risk-based approach. Furthermore, if the risk posed by a particular business or customer is too great to manage successfully, the decision to de-risk should only be made after careful due diligence and consideration. I think it's also important to note that the Prudential Authority does not influence or partake in the decision-making process by the banks or the decisions taken by the banks to exit customer relationships. Banks have their own internal forums and internal governance processes for such matters. The contractual relationship and the risk management policies and processes of the bank will determine the decisions that are taken by the bank. Fazana, I don't know if it's possible to please move to the next slide. Thank you. Just briefly, and I'm sure many are aware, in terms of the Code of Banking Practice, this is a voluntary industry code that was developed by the Banking Association of South Africa. It's enforceable against banks by the Ombuds for Banking Services, which requires reasonable prior notice before closing an account unless compelled by law or best practice, non-use of account for a significant period or reason to believe the account is being used for illegal purposes. But this is only applicable to personal small business client accounts, that is where the annual turnover is less than 5 million. Chair, thank you, Fizana, and Chair, thank you. That is the end of our presentation.
Thank you, Samira, and thank you, Chair. So, Chair, we're happy to hand back over to you and the committee. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thanks very much, National Treasury, FSCA, and the Prudential Authority for the presentation. Let's move to item 5, interaction by the committee. Members of the committee, there you are. Dr. George.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm going to leave my video off because my reception is choppy. I think that the Treasury and the FSCA were clear, and thank you very much for your presentation. It puts the matter firmly into perspective. It seems to me that the banks are clearly responding to the pressure on them to comply with a requirement for them to combat money laundering, illicit cash flows, and terrorist financing. I have said before in this committee that it is my view that the banks often target the wrong people. So with FICA, for example, they constantly ask people, salaried people, for proof of income, proof of residence. But it's clear that many of these people do not have additional income and therefore are very low risk. But it does make life extremely difficult, especially when the bank freezes the account, because then it's impossible for people, as was mentioned earlier, to go and pay their bills and to transact, buy food, etc. So it is problematic when the bank doesn't target efficiently and goes for the lowest hanging fruit, which is not necessarily fair. Also, anecdotally, I am aware of banks freezing accounts without advising their clients, without providing any reasons for it also, but that is not confined to any particular demographic group. So I don't believe for a moment that there's a specific, a bank specifically targets anybody based on a demographic. I do not think that's the case. It seems that they see transactions in a bank, in an account, they come to some kind of conclusion or their system flags something, and then a freeze happens or request for information, etc. That certainly seems to be what is happening. Also, with grey listing looming, it would be expected that banks would have heightened scrutiny now because we know what the consequences would be. So it's all very good and well for us in South Africa, for example, to want to have a looser kind of arrangement. But that will not be useful because the international regulations are pretty strict. So if we don't comply with that, we are heading for a major disaster. So it's not only our local jurisdiction that needs to set the rules. We need to bear in mind international rules. And I think that's clearly what the banks are doing. But they do need to be more specifically targeted and not unfairly impact on people when they are actually not breaking the law like some others do. And also, finally, it is not the job of government to interfere in the relationship between a commercial bank and its clients. I mean, that is not our function. It's also not the function of parliament. So I don't believe that we should be interfering in that. Also, this matter is before the court. So the court must rule, they must decide, and they must then pronounce. I do think, and this is something, as I said before, is that we need to look at how we protect those people who are salaried employees, they're not moving, there's no risk, very low risk, for that burden on them to be made easier. But of course, at the same time, the burden on those who are committing these crimes to be made much stronger. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Dr. George. Honorable Mrolong, Honorable Skosan.
Well, thank you very much, Chair. Chair, we need to be aware of the fact that there is a matter before us, which we need to ventilate, lest we become too academic and do not deal with the matter at hand. I wanted, in the first instance, the FSCA, given the fact that they are on record as saying they have not received many of such similar complaints. There's a matter before us, whether they can confirm or deny that they have received this matter and how have they dealt with it. I'm also of a view, Chair, that Parliament should actually respond to the recommendation by Justice Zondo that existing legislation be changed or that Parliament introduce new laws requiring banks to afford clients an opportunity to defend themselves. Because I am also of a view, Chair, that you know it is ordinary South Africans who bear the brunt of a groundless or arbitrary bank closure, because as it has been indicated here, such actions lead to the inability of corporates being unable to pay their salaries or you know, third-party obligations. I've had the Prudential Authority and to some extent FCA, you know, referring to joint standards on matters of common interest. But I've also heard them speak about guidance notices. I know they can go as far as interpretation rulings. How effective are these guidance rulings? I also agree, Chair, that a wholesale closure of bank accounts could you know potentially you know lead to opacity because there's little or no accountability at all, especially with respect to the affected persons or entities. I'd like us to take this further. Chair, and request that we need to have a much bigger detail provided for on how all these matters have been dealt with. As I've said, this is we should not reduce this exercise to be more academic. We need to get details. So I'm going to suggest that as a matter of extreme urgency, the bank ombud must be able to just shed light so that we determine whether, you know, there is a target with respect to demographics or not. Because at the moment, we are unable to really quantify whether there has been a specific focus on race or on gender. So it would be important that such detailed a presentation be made in not so a distant future. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Honorable Ngolo. Honorable Skosan, Klonish.
No, ngiya thokoza sihlalo. Thokoza khuluka mambala. Begodu ngiluchisa woke amalunga ahloniphekileko nemvakashi zethu ezikhona ezibuya kwa-Guardian Godrich Attorneys, the National Treasury, the FSCA, the Prudential Authority, and other stakeholders present.
Yeah, Chair, I think I'm partly covered by Honorable Murolo with respect to the issue of demographics, because I think it's a worrying factor as we were listening to the presentation by the Gadi Godrich attorneys, as they are raising it as an issue. I think as public representative, I think for us, I think it becomes a worrying factor. And I don't think it's something that we should just leave it like that. I think we need to dig deeper on it, because I think it will be really unfair that after 28 years of democracy, something like that happens, if it's true that it's happening. So I think it's something that we need to really follow it up just to make sure that it's not happening, because really I think it will be unfair to our people. That will be serious discrimination, that if people would be targeted because of demographics, that's a worrying factor. So I think it's a matter that, like the as per the proposal of Honorable Murolong, it's something that we need to follow it up. And another worrying factor, I've heard the reasons given by the National Treasury, the FSCA, and the Prudential Authority of why in most cases banks are being closed, bank accounts are being closed. The issues of reputational damage on the side of banks, the issue of suspicious transactions and so forth. But there's a matter also raised by the Gadi Godrich attorney of an organization called Democracy in Action, as I was listening, that their account was closed because of their proximity to a certain prominent person. So I'm wondering if, for instance, I've got a certain relationship or proximity to a particular individual who's prominent for whatever reason. I mean, how does that therefore affect my own account as Kosana? If there are no suspicious transactions happening, just by the mere fact that I am associated or related or close to a certain individual who's prominent for whatever reasons. I think it's something that we also need to look at. How can that then affect my own account? Because I think my own account should be affected by the fact that it has a potential to give reputational damage to a bank, or there are suspicious transactions that are taking place in my own account. But how can my own account as an individual or as an organization be affected by another person, whether that person is conducting some other business that have got a potential to damage the reputation of an institution? But what about my own account? I think they need to explain to us in relation to that. And I think the FSCA has indicated that that in terms of the law, there are instances where banks are supposed to give their clients a reasonable notice before the closure of account. But I think they also indicated that there are instances that they will close the bank account even before giving that notice to their clients because of perhaps a suspicious transaction whatsoever. But then the question is, say they decided to close that account without notifying the client because of suspicious transactions, are they not, even after the closing of the account, are they not supposed to then give the reason to the client to say, Mr. Skosana, don't be surprised, we have closed your bank account because of 1, 2, 3. Can they just shut down my account and then just keep quiet and don't say anything to me? Then it must be me who must then stand up and go to them and go to this office and that one. Are they not even, after they have closed my account, to say, don't be surprised your account has been closed or has been freezed because of these particular reasons? Yeah, that's the question, Chair. No, thank you very much.
Siyathokoza mhlonishwa Sikhosana. Ach, but Vessers?
Well, thank you, Chairperson. I'm also going to leave my video off due to connectivity issues. Chairperson, know what I want to also refer. Reflect on what the Honourable Sikhosana just, that this matter and the specific matters referred to as and spoken about at the beginning in the initial presentation is currently before the court. And we cannot at this stage pronounce ourselves on if there was arbitrary closure of those accounts, because that is the legal question before the court. And the sub judice rule does apply to the proceedings of this committee as well as contained in the standing rules and orders. It is an important issue to reflect on, and I think the presentations made today was good, but I think we should leave the court proceedings to go ahead and pronounce themselves, or let the court pronounce itself on the merits of these matters. We cannot prematurely go into the merits of these cases. That would be highly irregular for this committee. And we must also remember, Chairperson, that the proceedings of this committee forms part of the proceedings of Parliament, which at the end of the day is also a secondary source of law. And that makes it very irregular to discuss merits of a case that is before the court. We can talk about the broad principles. I think we've been informed about that, but we should let the court decide on this and adjudicate this matter. Thank you, Chair.
Yeah, thank you. Let me allow Advocate Sibuku to ask a question or make a comment before Treasury, Prudential Authority, an FSCA respond, then we move to the last item. Advocate Sibuku. Advocate Sibuku, are you there? Because I see you are raising your hand.
I am here, Chair.
Yeah, do you want to ask a question or you want to make a comment before we move to the next item?
I just wanted to make a brief observation on the comments of a few honorable members, particularly Honorable Shibambo, Honorable George, Honorable Morolong and Sikhosana. But whilst I was preparing for that, then we had the comments or observation of Honorable Vessels about the sub judice role. I think at the very outset, at the very beginning of our presentation, we did mention that we're not going into the merits of the pending court case in the Equality Court, but we are here on because Parliament has got the obligation of exercising its oversight function to ensuring that banking institutions do not unfairly treat persons. And we have listened to the contributions of all the regulatory bodies. And having listened, I think it's the common thread between everybody's, all the institutions' submissions or presentations is that the banking sector is not entitled to unilaterally and arbitrarily interrupt banking services. So we're very much alive to what happened. The Zondo Commission suggested, in line with parliamentary's oversight function, that the banking laws and all related or the legislative framework needed to be amended, especially the audi alteram, the right to fairness and an opportunity for that bank's client to be given an opportunity to make representations if in circumstances where the bank is considering a closure of a bank account. So I just needed to come in and clarify that we are not here discussing the matter, and we very much also believe and respect the sub judice principle and all other related principles. That's all. Thank you, Honorable Chairperson.
Thanks, Advocate Sibuku. Advocate Jenkins.
chairperson. I appreciate the opportunity. I just wanted to make a quick remark. I just want to take the committee back to the previous parliament where we produced the transformation in the financial sector report, which was seen as sort of a legacy issue left by the previous finance committee. Excuse me?
Advocate. Okay.
Thank you, Chair. The issue of the closure of bank accounts and the effect it has was mentioned there just very shortly in that report on the transformation of the financial sector. So it's a matter that is before this committee. That report itself said the committee will review issues raised in that report because the report was a very broad report. It didn't go into specific issues. So there is scope to go into the specific issue of closure of bank accounts. Now, Chair, I think that the letter that the committee received and what I heard today here speaks of the private law relationship between banks and clients, and that the conduct standards that's been set are, Chair, I don't want to be taken up wrongly. It just sounds, I haven't read them, but it sounds that they're very much guidelines rather than enforceable provisions. And I just want to indicate to the committee that having the legislative power to make a guide into a law, that can happen. And if we take the issues of employment, that has happened with the Basic Conditions of Employment Act, where there were guidelines which were not followed by employers, and eventually Parliament went and set out the guidelines in legislation. Why making this connection, Chairperson? Because if I have a work, I'm not going to get paid. I'm talking about a salary position. I'm not going to get paid if I don't have a bank account. So bank accounts have become rather necessary for everyone to have. And there is fertile ground there, Chair, to look at this from a perspective of trying to make it a bit more of an equal relationship between banks and clients, which is not at the moment. And there has been other jurisdictions which have intervened in this matter, Chair. So those are issues that can be taken up, but it's a policy issue, Chair. It's a policy issue if Parliament wants to make legislation to intervene in that private law relationship. But it has been done. Thank you, Chair. I just want to leave it there. Thank you.
Ex-Advocate Jenkins, National Treasury, FSCA, Prudential Authority.
Thank you, Chair. I'm going to talk for long. Chair, a lot of what was said in the specific questions from members, although relate to broad principles, those principles are the content and the very content of what is before the court. So we of course, Chair, cannot comment on those specific elements that have been raised. Suffice to say, Chair, from a broad perspective, we've tried to describe the broad policy framework and how the rules are being and conventions are being implemented. I will pass over to Fazana herself as in case she has any comments. But Chair, what was described there was a framework and a conduct standard. And Chair, maybe just to remind, of course, colleagues that conduct standards are secondary legislation. They're not optional. They're not guidelines or an instrument that can be ignored. That these are legal instruments. So you know, certainly for the aspects that that were outlined about providing, about not altering the private contractual relationships, but certainly setting standards of acceptable behavior and conduct on the side of the banking sector. Those are legal instruments. So Chair, I thought I'd just sort of end with that and maybe just one more additional point. The on the last aspect, which just relates to Zondo, the Zondo Commission on the inquiry on state capture, that Chair, that there were that those specific recommendations contain not just the one that was mentioned today, but I guess there's a wider range of recommendations that were made, that those will be those will form part of a comprehensive response that will be provided to Parliament, and that will include areas where a legislative amendment may be required, and that of course would be coordinated and brought to Parliament in the coming weeks and months. Let me just double check with our colleagues, Chair, whether they have anything to add before. Yeah.
Yes, thank you, Fokile, and with your permission, Chair, if I can just very briefly come in and reiterate some of the comments and respond to some of the comments. So I think firstly, I just want to say thank you to Advocate Siboko for her last emphasis and reiteration that the intention was not to go through the merits of the matter. And I raised this because I think a few of the members, Mr. Moroleng, Mr. Skosana, asked if we could go into some of the details around how the FSCA has dealt with the specific issue and the specific case. So just taking the lead and the guidance also from Advocate Siboko, we unfortunately not in a position to talk around what the FSCA's position is in terms of that particular case. Again, because a few members have emphasized that this is sub judice and on our legal advice. Also, I think it would not be appropriate for us to go into that detail at this stage. There were a few other questions that I'd like to respond to. So I think there was one a useful question also from Mr. Moroleng around the effectiveness of guidance notes interpretation rulings. So we have on occasion on other issues issued guidance notes either as the FSCA or jointly with the Prudential Authority. And we do find that these are effective in the sense of giving more practical guidance and advice to institutions on how to interpret and apply the law. And I think this goes to the comments that I've made in my presentation, that while the principles are clear in the conduct standard, they are a bit general, and it might be useful to develop some sort of guidance to make sure that the weights applied by the banks are consistent. I think also the last comment around the enforceability of the conduct standard, and Vukile has touched on this, but I also want to emphasize that the conduct standards are not guidance. They are subordinate legislation. They are enforceable if we do find substantive evidence of non-compliance with the conduct standards. We do have the power to enforce, including the imposition of administrative penalties, etc. I think the distinction that we were trying to draw is that this doesn't alter the nature of the relationship between the bank and the customer. At this point, the law does not go so far to actually say we can intervene and either prevent a bank from terminating a relationship or requiring them to enter into a relationship. And I think that was the point that was also raised by Member Jenkins, that perhaps that's the discussion that needs to be had at this particular committee. So we recognize that there are certain requirements in the conduct standard, and we're only empowered to act in so far as the law as it stands today. And there have been very important issues raised today. And I think the discussion at a policy level for Parliament is exactly whether the standards as they are right now, whether the legislative framework as it is now goes far enough, and whether further legislative intervention is necessary. And I think that's something that is outside of the power of the regulators. And as it stands, we will act within the mandate and the law as it currently stand. So that's just the response from our side. But again, it was very useful, and thank you for allowing us the opportunity to share. Samira, I don't know if there's any final thoughts from the PA's perspective that you want to add. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Fazana. Thank you, Chair. No, not too much to actually add. I think we're also in a similar position in terms of this matter being sub judice, so unable to discuss specific matters. However, I do believe it. One of the honourable members, I think it was Mr. Moralong, had mentioned grey listing. So just in terms of the grey listing matter, just briefly to say that, yes, there is a lot of scrutiny, a lot of attention being paid to South Africa at this point in time, and all eyes on in terms of us and the progress that's being made to address the findings. But just in general, in terms of the report itself, when it comes to the application of a risk-based approach, et cetera, the stance is, or the expectation from FATF is that when dealing with clients, that there is an adequate and effective risk assessment process that's in place that is followed by the various accountable institutions that are expected to comply with the Financial Intelligence Center Act requirements. So that is very important. So it essentially boils down to the ability of entities to adequately risk rate their customers and apply the commensurate due diligence measures that may be applicable, which then allows for the differentiation between the low risk or and high risk customers and the level of due diligence that would be required. Nothing further from myself. Thank you, Fazana, and thank you, Chair.
Thanks. I think there's Christopher from FIC who would want to make an input.
Thank you, Chairperson. So apologies for coming in late into the discussion. We just align ourselves with the views expressed by the regulators and the appreciation of this committee that it's a very difficult time for us to be appearing before this committee, and we duly respect the committee and are appearing to deal with the issues, because all of us as regulators are parties, I believe, to the litigation. So even while we may speak principles, the very same principles are also subject to the court proceedings, and it is very difficult in that regard. But we do, from the FIC perspective, would want to participate with the other regulators and the SARS to fully ventilate these issues. And hopefully that can be done at a time when the court proceedings would have run its course and we are able to go into the level of detail that the honourable members have requested that we go into. And we think that if we are afforded that opportunity at the appropriate time, all of us would be the better off, and we would be much wiser as to how to deal with this very challenging issue of the risk management. It's essentially about risk management of bank, you know, the bank customer relationship. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thanks, Chris. I think it looks like you are the last before I move to the item of making concluding remarks. Okay, thanks. Thanks very much, honorable members. Also thank our colleagues from FSCA, FIC, Judicial Authority, National Treasury, and other entities in the meeting. I think we should not lose sight of who we are. We are Parliament. Parliament has been established by the Constitution and derives its mandate from Chapter 4. Of the Constitution, which Chapter 4 sets out the functions that Parliament is supposed to perform. This is an elected body that represent the people of South Africa. And as a representative body, it is responsible for promoting and overseeing the adherence to the values of human dignity, equality, non-racialism, non-sexism, and all other rights enshrined in the Bill of Rights, and to oversee the implementation of the constitutional imperatives. Thus, in brief, is what Parliament is all about. So we are an elected body. If members of the public approach this board and say we have got an issue that we believe that Parliament can attend to, you can't close the doors of Parliament and say, go to court, we can't attend to you. When they were electing us, we never said, don't elect us. Your issues will be attended to by the judiciary. So we can't always outsource issues that we have to deal with as Parliament to another organ of government, which is the judiciary. We have got a role to play as Parliament. And in this case, we have been approached by the Godric Guardian, to complain about the unfair discrimination, irrational and arbitrary termination of bank accounts. We made it very clear to them that we are not going to deal with the case under review. There is a case out there, but there are issues that they are raising, and they are not the only ones who are raising this matter. At some stage, I was approached by some people to say that our bank accounts have been closed and they don't have money to enlist the services of attorneys and advocates. I think I referred them, if I'm not mistaken, to the deputy minister and to Prudential Authority for them, for their issues to be attended to. So it's not that it's only Gadi attorneys who are raising these issues. On regular occasions, we get calls from members of the public who complain about their accounts being closed. And we as Parliament, we have to refer issues of this nature to certain entities that have been established to deal with regulations. I'm not sure whether we're saying that if members of the public now are raising the issue of closure of their bank accounts, FSCA, FIC, National Treasury, PA, Prudential Authority, should not listen to them and wait for the court. So what are you going to work to do? It's wrong. Those state entities have been established to deal with certain regulatory matters, and they have to make sure that they execute their responsibilities. The case is something else. It will be dealt with on its own merit. But there are issues that members of the public are raising in regard to their bank accounts being closed arbitrarily. That's what they are saying. As it has been suggested by Honorable Mrolong and supported by other members, what we are going to do, we'll have to make a follow-up in this regard and invite the Ombud and is it the Banking Association? I'm not sure which is the entity or an organization that represents all the banks. It looks like it's the Banking Association or the Banking Council. Fazana, what institution is it?
Yes, so you're correct. It's the Banking Association of South Africa, and they are the ones that are actually responsible for the Code of Banking Practice. And that also gives jurisdiction to the banking ombud to deal specifically with these issues around bank account closure. So you're 100% correct. Those are the two entities. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks, Fazana, for that clarity. So as it has been recommended by Honorable Mrolong and supported Skosana and other members, we'll have a follow-up meeting where we'll invite the Banking Association, the Ombuds, and all the entities which are here present today will also be invited to that meeting so that we deal with the matter of policy. We are not dealing with the case which is in the Western Cape High Court. We are not a court, but there are policy matters that have to be attended to. Now that the matter has been officially raised by members of the public before this parliamentary board, we have to attend to it. We can't outsource our responsibility to the judiciary. Also, as we have been reminded by Advocate Jenkins, I see he has written here on the chart that he's a legal advisor, he's not a member of parliament. I think somebody referred to him as Honorable Jenkins. We'll have to attend to the legacy report that deals with matters of financial sector transformation. And somewhere, I think paragraph, whether it's 11, paragraph 11, there's an area where they deal specifically with this issue. So we'll have to attend to that legacy report. You'll remember we once had a meeting at the old assembly where it was agreed that National Treasury and NEDLAC will have to make a follow-up in regard to hosting another summit to make sure that we attend to issues that have been adopted by Parliament when it comes to financial sector transformation. So, Secretariat, let's pull out that report. We look at it and see how we can make a follow-up on the issues that have been decided by Parliament in regard to the financial sector. And also, of course, this September, it won't be possible. I think in the next term, when we come back, we'll create space and time to meet the Banking Association and the Ombuds to deal with this matter. Thanks very much, honorable members, FSCA, National Treasury, FIC, Prudential Authority, and other entities, and guardian attorneys, and others in attendance, the media. The meeting is officially adjourned.
Thank you.
Ay, yo lo sé, mucho. Tima.